The only problem we have right now is higher interest rates. Will interest rates come down? Who knows? You know, plan that they'll go up, and you'll be pleasantly surprised if they do come down, right? Because if you do buy a house at 7% and rates go to 10, well, that 7's all of a sudden cheap, right? And you did a really good job there, right? It's all about perspective. But if it goes down to 5, well, guess what? You probably got your house today at a price that's going to be less than if it is at 5, and you can just refi there, and you're ahead of the market that way. Yeah. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real estate. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Under All is the Land, Season 5, Episode 3. I am your buxom host, Courtney Polis.
Oh my God.
Here with my rock star co-stars, the lovely Silke Fernald.
Hi.
And the beautiful Dominique Madden.
Hello.
Hi, ladies.
Hi there.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I am killing it today. This morning has been intense, but I've been told I'm an intensity junkie. So
there you
just
go.
Just gonna ride that wave. Ride that wave.
I support it.
Okay. Surf the tsunami.
There you go.
I'm gonna get t-shirts that say that. Get your real estate license. Learn how to surf tsunamis.
That's what we're doing.
Yes. Well, I'm super excited today to talk to the founder of Mortgage Black, Sam Batania, who has 19 years experience in the lending industry. So he's been through all these types of changes before. Of course, there are always new things that the Fed throws at us, and also, you know, life and society throw at us that we can talk about, and new laws in California regarding ADUs and how do we finance those kinds of things. What's happening with the freaking interest rates? Inquiring minds want to know. So let's bring on our guest, Sam Batania. Sam.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, such a pleasure. Okay, so Silke and I have been wondering, is it intentional that all of your videos on your Instagram page start in the exact same hand position?
No. Not at all.
Okay, let's talk about your Instagram page.
Thank you.
And what is the handle?
Mortgage Black.
At Mortgage Black. Yep. Okay, great. And you do like regular updates.
Yeah. It's called This Week in Mortgage is the show. It's every Friday. Just like to give, you know, my view on what I think is interesting and important. And, you know, sometimes things happen because of what you would think might be unrelated things, but they all play into the same thing. Like uncertainties in the economy will drive interest rates down, for example, which obviously has a huge effect on housing.
Yes, indeed.
So, and then what makes, you know, certain uncertainties out there, like, you know, this recent war that happened, for example.
For example, let's talk about the impact that's had.
Yeah, you know, I thought it would have brought interest rates down a lot, and it didn't. It brought they came down recently, but I think that's more of a coincidence. It wasn't a one-to-one correlation. I think, you know.
Has it had any impact?
It did, about the first 8 trading days after, but then it went back up and recently has come back down because of the inflation reads that have been coming out there. Inflation's been tapering itself off a little bit, which was to be expected because
that was the intention of the policies.
Yeah, of course.
So how has business changed for you since these interest rates have gotten ridiculous?
Same as everybody. Slower. Mm-hmm. Less appetite. This isn't, the affordability's not there like it was.
Right.
We've entered into a needs-based market more than a, as we were discussing before, a needs-based market more than a, you know, want-to market. You know, people are putting their house for sale because they need to. They're, you know, retiring, downsizing, you know, relocating. Not necessarily because they want to, they need to. And the same on the buyer side. People's families are growing. People are relocating. People are, you know, life events occur. So they need to actually make a move as opposed to just, you know, back a few years ago, if you loved a house in your neighborhood, you're walking down the street, walking your dog, and you saw it for sale, and you said, oh, wow, it's for sale finally. We've been eyeing this house for 5 years. Let's make an offer.
You call your mortgage person, well, their interest rate, you know, was, we've had a downward trajectory for
8 years or something.
Well, really for the last 40 years, but I've been doing this, you know, closer to 20, but since the early 80s, rates have been coming down. So everybody always can almost swap out their mortgage to pretty, you know, there's been little blips up and down, but they haven't been extreme. Mm-hmm. Not like this. So there was always an opportunity to make, you know, lateral moves for people, you know, same square footage, just like this house a little better than this house, no big deal. Now, the affordability isn't there and prices are still very high. So your tax base is actually going to be reset to a higher place. So Affordability is just not there like
so
it was.
So what are you guys doing to combat that? Because obviously you need to make a living, right?
Keep working. That's it. What can you do?
You don't have any specialty programs or anything that are trying to offset these?
No, there's no magic. There's no magic, you know, pill, bullet, however you want to say it. These are the times that, you know, there's an old saying we've all heard, tough times don't last, tough people do, right? And this is one of those times in real estate where it looked to be too easy for a while to do mortgages, to sell and buy houses on people's behalf. And this is more of the other end of the extreme where it's really hard right now. And anybody who tells you it's easy just isn't even doing it or just, you know, not being, you know, forthcoming with their words, because it is very difficult.
So you feel like underwriting has gotten harder in this environment too?
Underwriting is, it's actually become more realistic over the years. So I'll tell you, so back in 2008, 9, and 10, underwriting was very difficult.
Because, I remember that.
Yeah, because we didn't really have a secondary market or a lot of stability on where to, you know, keep selling the paper. Because
No, it was there, but it was still recovering from the crisis, no?
Well, there wasn't a lot of appetite for mortgages back
right,
then.
Right, that's it. There were no consumers. Nobody wanted to buy the package mortgage deal.
On the secondary market.
Right.
There was not a lot of, you know, investors because they didn't believe in the asset that it was tied to. Because back then we had negative amortization arms that the actuaries, I'll just call them, whatever the people are that set up the back room guidelines for the secondary market, they got it all wrong. They thought that, you know, they thought that appreciation was never ending and it would always appreciate at a 6 or 7% clip. And we found out it didn't. So there wasn't a lot of secondary market appetite. So you had to fit into a very, very tight box back then. But the difference back then is rates were on their way down. And if you did fit into that box, you got a good deal because there was not a lot of consumers, to your point, looking to buy a house because, you know, the banks used to call it jingle mail. They'd get their mail and the keys would be in the envelopes. Banks used to get jingle mail. Well, those people that mailed the banks their keys are really regretting it now because the price of the house is now 2 or 3 times what it was, you know, back then. So now underwriting is very vast. There's a lot of programs out there. You know, we have the typical Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac programs that require tax returns. But, you know, back then there was no Airbnb income that you could take into account.
Right.
Now that, you know, last few years they've caught on to that. ADU stuff is now, they've all caught on to that.
Can we talk about ADUs for just a second?
Yeah.
Because there are some recent California laws that are now allowing ADUs to be kind of cordoned off and sold separately, legally. How's that going to be financed?
Well, the interesting thing is they want it to be treated like a condo.
I've heard that.
Is what I understand. So a condo, you have to, there has to be a homeowners association established with the main residing party and the party that they're selling the ADU to as a condo. So
it's still sitting on your land.
Right.
So the land doesn't come with the ADU. Your land too.
A condo, you don't even own the walls. You own the air between
the
walls.
It's horizontal ownership, right?
Well, it's just you don't own the walls. The association owns the walls.
Right.
And you own the space in between the walls.
So the previous owner is still attached to the ADU, or like the current owner, if I had an ADU.
Put it this way, it's going to take time.
That doesn't make sense.
Figure it out, right? So there's going to be people that. Okay, so when one of my clients wants to buy a condo, we get all the condo information.
Right.
Right? And then we send it into the condo review department.
Right.
And they have to make sure that the budget's in line, that there's enough, you know, money in reserves, that there's no lawsuits.
Right.
You know, on all that stuff. well, this is on, this is now going to be a two-party association, obviously, and they have to have their CNRs written up and all that kind of stuff. So they're going to have to go to condo association lawyers, have that written up, and then that is going to have to be reviewed by, at the end of the day, what's most likely going to be a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac type loan to be sold, you know, to be sold mm-hmm. to Fannie or secured right, by Fannie has, and Freddie.
But, so then if the part, okay, so just in a worst case scenario situation, say I'm a homeowner and I've got an ADU.
Right.
I'm like, this sounds like a great idea, which it doesn't.
Right.
And I sell my, I create a HOA where I'm a member and so is the prospective buyer of my ADU.
Yes.
I still own the land, right? Let's say.
Sure.
Because if it's a condo, the owner doesn't own the land. The HOA doesn't, or does the HOA?
Well, there's also.
What if I foreclose? What if I can't pay my mortgage on my main property? What happens to the asset for that guy?
Well, there's also a lot of, along the beach, there's a lot of folks out there that have a two-level building. Mm-hmm. One party owns one of the units. Another party owns the other one of the units. And they don't necessarily need an HOA. They just need some kind of operating agreement between the two parties. Mm-hmm. But this ADU thing has been specified to be treated as a condo.
Right, but I'm saying who owns the land?
The association,
I guess. Okay, so there is still, so it's like 50-50 ownership with the previous owner?
We will find out.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's yet to be determined. Because what if one person's, you know, unit is 4,000 square feet, the other person's unit is 2,000 square feet?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or you subdivide your plot and it's now smaller and then it has its own APN number and then it can be treated.
So I know.
But, that's not a condo, though.
That's not a condo. Right, but I know that rule, there's a rule for that as well.
Oh, there is.
Now people are allowed to. So I got a text message from this company called Backyard Vester or something like that. Something kind of clumsy, but basically said that they are looking for my clients because they want anybody who, they built tiny homes in their backyards. Basically, they said that they are looking for me to market their services to any clients who want to sell a portion of their backyard. So now it's like this
new, is going to turn into a big mess.
This is a mess already.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I thought with SB9 and like the ability to subdivide residential lots, it had to be the owner. Like the existing owner.
Yeah, the existing owner can subdivide the lot.
Right.
And then if there's a structure on that lot, then I would think it would be sold as like a tiny home, like a small single family on its own at the end. But that's not what the other law is talking about, selling ADUs as condos. Is it
condo literally or condo quote unquote?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. There's mm-hmm. going to be some distinction that's going to have to be clarified here, because the way it's looking, if it's, like if there's a building that one party owns one unit, another party owns another, they don't need a formal condo association written up. They just have like sometimes a joint bank account that they both contribute to, and you just show, you know, that exists and you can buy and sell that unit. But the reason this conversation is becoming the way it is because they actually use the word condominium,
right?
Condo,
right?
Which is different than just like a two-party agreement to run a structure.
Mm-hmm. So, right, this says Yardsworth. We make six-figure cash offers for backyard land via SB9 subdivision.
Wow.
Now, is there a minimum amount of square feet that needs to be sold?
Oh, God, who knows? Right. You know?
So I don't know if there. I think maybe the use of the term condo might be
revised later.
Yeah.
It's so irresponsible. Who makes these rules? I mean, these are lawmakers sitting in our state legislature, and they don't understand the impact of the words they're using.
I'm sure the California Association of Realtors and National Association of Realtors to some degree
influence that. Do you think that? Anybody who's a real estate agent, for sure, if they have realtors in the associations, which we don't totally know if they do or not, would know that calling it a condo comes with so much. I mean, wasn't it just this year that buildings that were previously FHA approved now have to all go through a reapproval process or something?
There's some of that. Yeah.
I mean, there's so much weight with condos, generally standards and all that thing, in order for them to be approved.
Well, here's the thing. We're not in a cash market. So if everybody was buying in cash, if all your clients were cash and nobody needed a mortgage, you could call it a condo, you call it whatever you
whatever
want.
Whatever you want, right. Mm-hmm.
We're not in a cash market. I think half the homes in the country are financed or have mortgages, timelines, who's owned a house for 20, 30 years, whatever. But, you know, and there's a difference. You know, in California, the conforming loan limit, you know, for a high balance in certain counties is, you know, $1.1 million.
Yeah.
In different parts of the country, you can buy a really nice house for $300,000.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, out here, there's going to be a lot more financing just naturally. So I think when they do make these laws and want to call something like this a condo, bring in, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the FHFA, their regulator, the VA, the FHA, whoever it is, bring them in and consult with them, because there's so much financing that's required to sell these properties, because we are not in 100% cash.
Well, that's
market.
What I was going to say. A big factor in whether or not a property is a good investment or not is what is your ability to resell the property.
Right.
I mean, that's a problem we have with TICs, tenant in common.
Right.
Limited amount of lenders actually do them. So yes. I think it's going to land more in the TIC probably category as far as the lending is concerned, unless it's subdivided land with a structure on it and it resells just like a small home on a small lot. But if it's actually going to live in this realm of co-ownership, or like two members of an HOA, or this land is not really owned by the person who owns the structure, then it's going to be more like a tenant in common situation, which has limited lenders and limited resellability, mostly because buyers don't all qualify for the financing to get it and don't always understand percentage-based ownership.
But like I think I don't think it's smart at all, because your main house is so close to your ADU. And what if your ADU is sold and you want to sell your main house, and then you have people be like, wait, I can't have this whole thing. I need, like, the ADU already
the
has
buy,
a different owner.
I mean, look, good fences make good neighbors.
It'll lower your value and it'll lower your appreciation, everything.
None of this seems well thought through. It just feels very strange.
It's going to have to be talked about, and they might have to remove the term condo.
Yeah.
From it might act more like a tick, like you're talking about, or like a co-op, you know, that, you know, there's not a ton of co-ops in California, but there are some on the East Coast. They have a lot of co-ops, of course. But those, you know,
we have a few here. For those who don't know, co-ops are shares of stock in a corporation that's represented as your building. I used to own a co-op in DC, and there are a few in LA. There aren't that many of them, but even those have specialty lenders and are difficult to resell, mostly because the HOA fees are very high, because they also include your taxes and sometimes utilities and that kind of thing. If you look at it apples to apples with a condo, and you're paying taxes here separately, and, you know, it kind of levels itself out, but because of the either lack of understanding about value in the market or the lack of resellability because of the specialty lenders required, they usually resell for less than their condo counterpart.
Well, and a co-op board has to approve you.
They do, but because of federal fair housing, co-op boards can only discriminate against you based on financial ability to pay the co-op fees. So usually if you're approved to pay the co-op, to pay the mortgage rather, you would be approved. But there's a process, right? There's still a board meeting. You still have to sit there. I mean, I used to be on the board of the co-op in D.C., and there's really nothing.
And judge somebody based on the industry that they're in? And
they
say,
can't.
Well, what if, but then real life happens, and they might.
But real life can happen to anybody at any time for any reason, and you still get mortgages. I mean, I could lose my job tomorrow, the day after I close on my house. So it's one of the most tightly regulated. I think my hypothesis about that condo board thing is that it was a way for people to discriminate back in the day.
Sure.
And they literally so desperately wanted to avoid the impact of, like, the kinds of laws that were being passed in the 60s that they created a corporation so they could control who lives there. And over the course of time, you know, the feds have gotten very clever to whatever was going on. And, you know, we had somebody in our co-op. This is a great story. Just another Courtney story, living in a co-op. I joined the board to be security for my building, because we had a person on the first floor who was bringing homeless people into the co-op, letting them sleep in the house, brought bed bugs to the entire building. There were tweakers with machetes in the lobby of my building attacking, like, people as they were walking in.
What year is this?
This is 2004, maybe?
Wow.
2005.
That's scary.
In DC. because it's so hard to get people out. So one of the things about co-ops is that technically the board can vote you out of the corporation if you don't pay your dues, right? But because there's so much tenant, at which point you would become a tenant at sufferance. So if you're in a woke city like LA or DC, pretty much you can do whatever you want and it's nearly impossible to evict someone. It's like the temperature has to be right.
But then they're
you have to
the
give
value.
Them a million different ways to come get out of it, you know, da 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 da. So
it brings a value down for someone sitting with a machete in your lobby.
I mean, it does, right?
So you joined the board to be the security.
I did. Yes, I did. Which was, it's, you know, it's like banging your head up against a wall. There's a lot of crazy cat ladies on that board. A lot of people who are like, were like progressives from the 70s or just hippies, like, let the man be, like, you know, he just like lets all people kind of thing. Like, like, oh my God.
You're like, this
life.
Is an unsafe environment.
It's so unsafe. I sat down there myself. I would monitor the security people that we... I'm like, this
I can
is ridiculous.
So see that.
You imagine that. I mean, no.
Yeah.
It's so me. But but I'm not the only horror story about sitting on co-op boards. It's literally, like, painful for most people. Condo boards, too, have a pretty bad reputation. But you know, but in tying it back to the ADU thing, if, God forbid, you're in an association with one other person and their finances are... you know, a little funky and, you know, I mean, it's just so, I just think tying yourself to a stranger in a one-on-one situation with this ADU law is just so poorly thought out. It's just so poorly thought out. So the person stops paying their mortgage, that thing gets foreclosed. Are you financially responsible? How do you get them out so you can go back to protecting your, whatever your interest is in this thing? Like, it's just sounds like a total mess.
It's just also such a final decision. Like once it's sold, it's sold.
Yeah.
You can't like undo decide, it. Oh, I want my ADU now. I want to use it as a garage again or something. You'll have someone walk past your kitchen window every time they get into into their back house.
Naked.
Which
having
is
homeless
your
people come
really
over.
Your house.
Anyway. I think the use of the term condo's going to have to.
Just, yeah, that has to go.
Irresponsible.
Pretty, I mean, maybe there's certain aspects that'll act like a condo, but it's not.
But how could it?
No.
Horizontal ownership, by its own definition, is like air. Like you were saying, it's airspace, right?
Yeah.
This has a structure. Like its own singular structure. I don't get it. I do not get it. So who's winning in this market from your experience with the lending? Do you have like a certain type of buyer who's like taking advantage of the lack of inventory and kind of using their smarts to...
Which buyers are winning?
Which buyers are winning?
The ones that have money.
Besides the cash offer.
Bigger down payments that can offset and they will just refinance later kind of thing?
Well, the whole refinance later thing, if somebody can tell me where interest rates are going to be tomorrow and nonetheless in 2 years, you know, I tip my hat to you because no one can tell you where rates are going to be.
No.
The way you look at financing is, so let's say you do a loan 30-year fixed today for 7%. Do a 30-year fixed and assume... the rates are going to go up. So when I plan for my clients, I have to assume two things. The rates are going up and values are coming down. And if I plan for my clients and give them advice based on those two things.
Well, I reject that.
Value's going down?
Okay, keep going.
You have to assume that and I'll tell you why. So in 2008, back to my story then about the Neg-Am loans, they calculated wrong. They assumed appreciation would always be the case. Well, appreciation didn't happen. We had depreciation for a moment in time. So if you plan for your mortgage, assuming rates are going up and values are coming down, you can never get in trouble and lose your house. If you plan for your mortgage that rates are coming down and values are going up, then you're going to end up like Washington Mutual, Countrywide, and all the banks that went out of business and all the foreclosures that happened because of that. So those are the two things you do. So for somebody to predict that rates are going to come down.
We've heard it. We like it. We have heard it.
You've heard it.
Yeah, because, well, can we talk for a second, because you're deeply into kind of the overall economic big picture. What role does housing play in the overall economic strategy of our federal government and of the
Fed? Housing, not in my estimation, housing is 30% of our economy.
Okay.
All the jobs created by it, you know, throwing home improvement into that. Just housing itself is probably 30% of our economy. Now, that's just dollars and cents. Housing in terms of, in my opinion, the general attitude and feeling of society is more like 70% plays.
Right, because we live in it.
Because you live in it, because it's like a sense of security, a sense of, you know, family,
status symbol too. It's like one of those things. It's part of the American dream.
It is the American dream, right? From what we've been told, is to own a home and have that. But why is it the American dream? It's so you can have a place to call your own and a sense of stability and security. Now, when they started making it the American dream, I think was, you know, when the soldiers are coming back from World War II, they did all of the
normalcy stuff.
Well, they wanted the
feeling of home.
The feeling of like comfort. Security of, right. Of this, but nobody ever imagined that your home would be your greatest investment. No one thought that.
Mm. Right? Really?
I don't think so. Not in the 40s and 50s, because you could buy a house. I have clients that have owned their houses for 50 years. I have clients that bought houses for $40,000 in 1970. Those houses are worth $3 million today.
Mm-hmm.
Not in their wildest dream did they think that their house they bought for $40,000. They thought they paid too much for it, by the way.
Right, of mm-hmm. course.
That's
right.
What literally everybody says.
Right.
Right.
Always, everyone yeah. I talk to, they're like, I thought that everyone told me I was crazy.
Well, right. Because, you know, I mean, despite the fact that, you know, maybe there are sometimes periodic downticks based on predictable artificial economic
everything
triggers.
Everything cyclical.
Like interest rates go up, prices come down because buyers' affordability goes down. Whatever. You can predict then that prices will be down. But in the long run,
yeah.
It always goes up. It does. Right. It always does.
Right. Well, and now here's the always. Thing. Well, values are safe mm-hmm. now more than ever because there is no inventory and they're not. And there's only so much builders can build because everything's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, counterintuitive to what you just said and what we've thought all along is when affordability goes down, values have to come down. Values have moderated.
They will, though. I mean, let me put
come
it
down?
Yeah, a little bit. Because
a little moderation.
Who's selling right now are people that have a lot of our clients, for example, who are in renovation space. Whenever they bought, the predicted value was here, not anticipating the hike in interest rates 2 years ago or whatever. And now, you know, obviously in order for them to break even or make money, they have to sell at a certain place, which is keeping those values high. But anybody who's buying right now is buying knowing that in 2 years, the resale value may be a little lower and they're getting a better deal on the buy side now to allow themselves the flexibility to deal with the price, you know, a couple years from now. So even though it takes time for markets to adjust, and so we're still seeing a leftover of stubborn sellers who really need a price in order to get out of a project, I think that's going to
Well, you're talking about away. Speculators and developers.
Well, yeah. I mean, right. We do have to predict market value, so there is some speculation.
Right, but that's not the
that.
Majority of the market. The majority of the market is a user-based market. Most people buying a home are using the home for a vehicle as a shelter or an investment to yeah. rent it out.
In LA, though, kind of like, you know, our grandparents or maybe our parents, you know, they bought houses and they intended to live in them for the rest of their lives. Like the 30,
the
they might actually
then.
Pay off their 30 yeah. year fixed rate loan, right? But, and just like when you got a job, like you'd stay at the company for 15 years
right.
and you never consider moving. This moment we're in, it's like people buy anticipating being able to resell within 5 to 7 years, make profit, buy something else and da da da. And just like with jobs and that kind of thing. So I do think on some level, and I have been asked by clients many times, what do you think I'm going to be able to sell this for in a couple of years? Like that is part of the
That's hard to predict.
Making. Of course, it's impossible
that's,
to predict.
That's hard to predict. And to even begin to try to give an answer is just
foolish.
Throw a dart at a board.
Yeah.
Right? Could be a little more, could be a little less. Mm. Could be the same.
But there's data to support
that it's going to be more.
That it's going to be a little more.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the...
So when I started the business, the average mortgage had a lifespan of 7 years.
Right.
Okay. So whether it be because the home was sold, they refinanced, whatever the case was 7 years. That was 20 years ago. Now, I'd say maybe 5 years ago, the average mortgage maybe had a life of 3 years, 2 years.
Wow.
Because right, we've been refinancing mm-hmm. people, right?
Right, right.
But now, because such a huge percentage of the population is locked into a 3% 30-year fixed.
They're not moving.
The yeah. average mortgage life went from 7 years 20 years ago to maybe 2 years 5 years ago to now probably up to 20 years.
Yeah. Really? 20?
Right, which actually makes it so it's a good annuity because all these mortgages are is a contract, a piece of paper. It's an annuity for an insurance company to invest in or a big company to invest in. It's just paper, just a contract. So forget about the collateral it's tied to, which is the house, which is the safest type of collateral to tie it to. And that's why the cheapest money you're always going to be able to borrow is going to be on a home, on a structure, because it's considered to be the safest. That's actually a very good contract now for a big insurance company to lock in money. at 7% for the next 20 years, where they a few years ago, it kept turning over, right? So you had to keep up with the secondary market, and if the pool of loans you bought all got refinanced within a year, well, you had your money back, you had to reinvest it. So it was like this race to the bottom to keep buying these mortgages. Now, if you're holding 7% paper, if you're holding 3% paper, that's never, you're always gonna get that 3%. Is that 3% good enough though now is the question.
Right, right? Because now you can put your money somewhere else and make more.
So the average age of a mortgage now will probably go up a lot because of the 3% mortgage. People are gonna hold on to that as long as they can. I call it mortgage love. Because you might not love your property, but you're gonna love your financing. So it's gonna be really hard to sell any property that has that financing tied to it.
Right.
Which is actually turned into an asset. If you think about it, a 3% mortgage, which is a monthly liability, is now an asset to you in your overall global perspective of your life. Because if you were to go try to get fresh money, it'd be at double or more than double in some and most cases.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So now a 3% mortgage, which is a monthly bill, is now an asset, if you think about it like that.
Right. So when you also take into the take into account, even if you're living in a property for a couple of years and then it no longer works for you, you've paid down your principal. And now if you rent it out, your tenants are going to be paying down your principal at an even greater rate than you were, you know.
As rents increase.
So you hold it onto it as an investment property as opposed to reselling it because it makes more sense financially too.
Yeah. It's one of the rare times where you see a monthly bill, a liability, be a huge asset to you, which is when your money is, you know, less than half of the money going out there.
Debt as an asset.
Yeah.
That's how smart people use real estate.
Well, that kind of debt is, you know, you can't sell. You can rent it out.
Yeah, you should rent it out.
Yeah, you should rent it out.
You can sell, but you're not. You'll have a better benefit if you hold on to it.
If you need to buy a new place, you can tap the equity.
Right. Are you doing a lot of equity loans?
A ton.
Yeah.
A ton. So people call, you know, for my whole career, people have been calling, hey, ran up some bills, credit cards, this, that, this, you know, want to pay off these student loans, whatever it may be. Again, we've always been able to make a lateral move or just maybe a slightly higher move on a cash out basis on their mortgage because the market's always been, you know, coming down a little bit, just little blips up, 0.25%, 0.5% here, but nothing ground shaking like it is now. So now when somebody calls and I blend the ratio, if somebody owes $1 million at 3%, they need 200 grand to pay off credit cards. If I do the blended ratio, their blend is still so much less. I can't refinance them and get rid of that 3% loan and have the tail wag the dog, 20% of the money in charge of 80% of the money, whatever the ratio is. So now we do a lot of equity lines where we used to do cash out refinances and consolidate the whole thing. Because you always get cheaper money on your first trust deed mortgage than you will on your equity line. Typically been the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know for a lot of our clients, like looking for the solution to the equity issue is, you know, to be able to move up because life does happen and you have to move, but you know, it's like you want to make as much money as possible on the house that you bought. And thankfully in Los Angeles, people do want to live here. And I think that real estate's always a commodity, you know, but how much profit is the question? And are you buying and selling in the same or in more advantageous market, which is what you ideally want to do? For you with using Instagram in order to kind of like get your face out there, do you feel like you get a lot of leads from Instagram? Are you using social media more than you used to now in this post-COVID environment?
I've been doing social media. I should have been doing it for the last 10, 12, 13, 14. I don't know how long it's been around, but I've been doing it pretty much since 2017. So I think it's been 5-6 years now, whatever it is. The thing I find about social media is I just want to be consistent. I think that's the most important thing. So it's, you know, our business, because there's a lot of competition, whether it be, you know, the mortgage side, the realtor side, whatever side of it is, there's a lot of competition. We're in the out of sight, out of mind business, right?
Right. If we don't need you.
Well, if you can't see you, we don't, there's people. In my opinion, we take in so much more, we take in more data now in 1 week than we did in 1 year, 25 years ago when I was, you know, a kid. There's so much information just thrown at us now, right? You know, that, you know, you could back then maybe see, you know, an ad for a mortgage person once a week and then that's the last one that stuck with you. Now, if you just go on your Instagram, you're gonna see 10 mortgage people in 5 seconds.
Right.
So I just want to be the last one you saw. So if I'm consistent, the odds of me being the last one you saw are better than if I'm not consistent.
But do you find that it's generating like inquiries?
Of course.
Yeah. So it's now like a key component of your marketing plan.
Well, I think it's a key component of every company's marketing plan, not just mortgage.
Well, I mean, I think people have competing agendas on social media. Sometimes it's for authority. Sometimes it's for narcissism. Sometimes it's for
Most of the time it's for narcissism.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. I don't care what somebody ate for breakfast that day.
You don't?
No.
Well, you aren't fascinated by their food?
No, not at all.
Shocking.
I think food is the lowest.
How do you feel about cats?
Yeah, I like cats, but I definitely don't need to see what somebody had for dinner last night.
There was a time whenever people said if you just put hashtag cats, you'll get more views on any post that you
cats
that
off Instagram.
Posting. Yeah, because cats are just like always killing it on social media. Anyway,
no, they are.
You see companies that have been around hundreds of years that are on social media paying sponsored ads.
Yeah, because I think behemoths, and also just from... As a company that is using social media, you don't have it. Social media is really created for a unique individual voice, I think, as opposed to a corporate voice.
Well, before you had to have a lot of money.
Corporations now have to create the voice.
You used to have a lot of money to have a voice, whether it be on TV, radio, or billboard.
Right. Yeah.
Now it's free.
It's free. Well, yeah, sort of, unless you boost your ads. Whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, you can
produce the content.
Yeah, but you can, in theory, just.
Post whatever,
and it's free. And based on, you know, your content, if people like it or not, you could be more powerful than a company that's been around 200 years and spent billions of dollars on advertising.
It's a reality.
Yeah.
It really is. It's all perception now, too.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's leveled the playing field.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
To wrap up, I have just one big question. Of course, you guys feel free to jump in, but I just want to know, are you optimistic about... what's going on in our market and the lending?
Yes, because this too shall pass. Now, if you went through 2000, if you're a new person in the real estate industry that started a year before COVID, where the market was kind of just normal, it was just a moving market, right? Some needs-based stuff, some luxury stuff, like, oh, I really like the house, the dog, walking the dog example, the neighbor's house, you'll buy it, because rates were sideways. You saw what like a normal market looked like in 2019. COVID turned it into this unrealistic market where everybody could afford a $3 million house. Mm-hmm. That's just not realistic. That's not real life. And if you went through 2008 and 9 and 10 for some parts of it, where the sky was literally falling, where we were submitting loans to banks.
That were going broke
every
at
Friday.
At the closing table.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Remember that.
Literally, the government would go in and seize a bank on a Friday night. We submitted loans to banks, and I'd have to call my clients on Monday morning saying, hey.
So sorry.
Bad news.
You know, there was 8 banks left. Now there's 6 banks left. Right. And we just so happened to send your loan to one of the two that was seized on Friday night because they had the best interest rate.
Right.
You know, so, you know, that's when the sky was falling, and it literally was falling. Now we've got money sources. We've got different, you know, DSCR loans on investment properties where you can underwrite a residential property like a commercial property and have the majority of the weight of the underwrite put on the property itself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Some stuff about the client, but you know, the income piece, which is the main piece beyond that. You know, there's cross collateralization, foreign national loans. There's a lot of different loan programs now. The only problem we have right now is higher interest rates. Will interest rates come down? Who knows? You know, plan that they'll go up, and you'll be pleasantly surprised if they do come down, right? Because if you do buy a house at 7% and rates go to 10, well, that 7 is all of a sudden cheap, right? And you did a really good job there, right? It's all about perspective. But if it goes down to 5, well, guess what? You probably got your house today at a price that's going to be less than if it is at 5, and you can just refi there and you're ahead of the market that way.
Right.
So the way I think about a home, especially your primary residence, it's a utility at the end of the day, because you have to have a shelter, you have to live somewhere. You're either going to pay rent and not build any wealth in that rent and like you were saying, pay somebody else's mortgage, right? Or you pay your own mortgage, and regardless of appreciation or not, you've got an opportunity to gain in the future. But if you're renting, you will not have that opportunity.
Right.
You're just going to be renting forever. And I saw this meme running around Instagram. Oh, if in 1971, if you waited for rates to go down, you would have waited till 1993 for rates to go down from 1971. But during that time period, you know, the value of homes, you know, doubled or tripled or quadrupled. And I think that's accurate. And I think that's more accurate now because the cost of building is so high. So just like we were saying, you know, that a liability, which is a 3% mortgage because you have to pay on it, is also some people's now's biggest asset. So I think home ownership is always an important thing, you know, not just on an everyday basis, but as like as a feeling, as a person and a consumer.
Right, the intangible has value.
It has a value. So I think things will be fine. You know, things will be fine. It's just because the market hasn't stopped.
Right.
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 You would think, if you would have asked me, what if rates went to 7 when we were doing 275, 30-year fix, I would have said, oh, there'd be no real estate market. Well, guess what? There is.
Right. Because people still can't afford to buy a house.
Well, and people need houses, and that's the reality. And, you know, the reality is, too, that the money is easier to make for a lot of people now than it was, you know? Like, the market is more global. It's easier for people to find different avenues to make money. So I think a lot of people are looking at the economy in a prehistoric way. Like, really a pre-technology way, you know, a pre-social media way, where now, especially like the new generation who's literally being taught coding in school, they're going to come out and they're going to be on top of the world riding the tech, you know, I mean, the tech hike, you know. So really the asset is the most valuable thing because the value of the dollar is going down. And as the money's easier to make and they keep printing more, you know, it's the land that, you know, that we really don't have more of.
You mentioned something global. There are certain cities in our country that are global cities, LA being one of them, San Francisco being one of them, New York, Miami. There's certain places where people from all over the world are going to want to own real estate. This is one of them. That's always going to boost a market.
Yeah. Everybody wants to live in LA.
They sure do. It's for the sunshine and the tatas. Anyway. That's this episode of Under All Is the Land. Thank you so much to our guest Sam, and we will see you next time.
Bye. Under all is the land. Under all